Hey folks, welcome to the Redneck Country Podcast. I am on with Real Redneck Bill. Tom, Bill, are you there?
Good evening, everybody. I'm here and ready to have a good chat.
He's here and ready to rock. You know what I just realized just now?
What's that?
Is that I have not called you Bill Thom in quite some time, and I'm very disgusted with myself.
Well, you know, there's evolution everywhere, and if this is where we got to go with this podcast, that you're finally learning the right way to do things, and we're good to go.
Yeah. All right, Bill Thom.
So, for old time's sake, I like it.
Pretty yeah, good. I forgot I was bringing that back. How was your week? What's new? What'd you do?
Not a ton. We finished off turkey hunting season. I know we had a couple opportunities to get in the woods there with my son, who kind of impressed me once again, getting out of bed before my alarm clock even went off just to prove that he could do it. So that's pretty good of him to do that, but he was asleep before sun came up. But had a really, really awesome experience in the woods this week that I don't think I've ever had. I know I've never had before with deer, actually. So, I mean, I guess I can tell you that story real
quick. Got him close enough to shoot? No, I'm sorry.
Yeah, during the turkey hunting season, too. That's typically the way it goes.
I was going to say, you've shot bigger deer than me, so I'm going to bite my tongue. Carry on. But
this, it was a good opportunity for my son to learn something as well. We get in the woods for turkey hunting, and it was dark. Man, it was dark on Saturday when we went in. And we get sitting in our spot, same spot that we were within probably 30 yards of where we had the good experience last week. And I'm thinking, if I can get that close again, we should have opportunity to be right in their bedroom, the turkey's bedroom, and maybe have opportunity to get a shot. But the first light was it was early enough that I still had the gun in the gun sock. So it was before legal shooting time. And this noise that my son had never heard before, that every hunter who's ever hunted long enough has heard of getting busted by a deer, you know, the distinct noise that doe makes where you're in its territory and you shouldn't be. And it blows at you for, you know, three minutes. And
if your heart don't sink, there's something wrong with you.
that deer got within, I'd say, 40 yards of us, right downwind. And it let loose with one big and my son just about jumped right out of his seat because he'd never seen or heard that before. And that deer went probably another 40 yards away. So it's about 80 yards. And now it's just blowing and blowing. And then all of a sudden,
shoot, deer.
Three bounds and it goes away. I'm thinking, nice. I mean, a good experience first thing in the morning. He had heard something in the woods that he's never heard before. Kind of a win for him. Well, 20 minutes goes by. Now the gun, we're at legal shooting time. He's got the gun in his hands. I'm all loaded, ready to go. And the sound that a fawn bawling. I don't know if you've ever heard this in the woods before.
No, that ma.
Exactly. Yeah. The fawn was bawling directly behind us, probably about, I don't know, I'm going to say about 65, 70 yards directly behind us. And it bawled maybe three times. And then up from the woods comes the doe, and the doe beelines it right for this fawn. Fawn makes one more bawl. The two of them join each other up, and the bawling stops. But
that would be cool.
Talk about neat experience, because that fawn didn't make but three sounds, and that deer, I don't know how far away it was, but it was just charging through the bush, ready to be safe or get the safety of its baby there.
Yeah, but isn't that awesome?
It was cool. I'd never seen that or heard that in the woods before. I mean, I've seen lots of deer, that's for sure, but to hear that fawn bawling and to see mama come charging through the woods like it was going to destroy everything in its path, that was a pretty neat thing to see.
Yeah, right on. I was that is really cool. I and it yep, nature. Nature at its best. I thought you were going to say you'd never been busted or had a doe blowing at you or a deer blowing. Because you need to go turkey hunting with my dad.
I've had that lots. Remember, I'm the almost guy, right?
So. Oh, that's like if a deer isn't blowing at us walking into turkey woods, we're either too late getting in or we're in the wrong woods or something. It's the twilight zone.
Yeah, we're good week.
Yeah, the final straw of turkey season, and we're gonna save this for another podcast. I am not even gonna enlighten you. I'm gonna hold the story, and we can bring Scott and Dad back on, and they can share in it with me because we were all together for the last day of our turkey season hunt. And dad had not gotten one at that point in time. So I'm not going to
keep me in suspense.
I'm going to keep everybody in suspense and not say whether we were successful or not successful or what all went down. I will say that it was exciting, but some frustrations at times, but I mean, that's hunting with your father. So I'm sure if we got Hunter on here, he could back me up on that. So
yeah, I'm sure about it. The only question I do have for you though, is did you get him across the creek this time?
We didn't go to where the creek was. We went to where me and Scotty both pounded our birds.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. So what I call
the
Hogwarts of turkey hunting, because it is magical.
Nice. Awesome. Awesome.
So it is a good woods.
To hear the story.
So, but we always see deer. I mean, in any of those woods we go to, we have them blowing and out in the field stomping and dad is just mesmerized by it. Like, look at that deer. I'm still looking for turkeys around and he's watching the deer go by and trying not to disturb it or anything like that. I'm thinking we're hunting turkeys, not deer. I don't care about the deer right now. But
did you get your turkey report done for the ministry?
I have not. I got to do that, and I know I got an email that it's due sometime soon, but I don't know.
Yeah, when. The 14th. It was pretty easy for me. A lot of zeros across the board.
You should get your own. It just says check here if you're still the almost guy.
Yeah. Check. Big check. Yes.
Oh, that's too far. Sorry, Bill. Let's have a moment of silence for Bill's turkey season.
All right. Tag soup recipes. I'm waiting for them. And I tried a little recipe yesterday, but we'll talk about that next on.
Yeah, right.
It
wasn't
tag soup, but I should have started the charcoal barbecue with it. That would have been memorable. So
it would forever be in there like the ashes. Yeah. You'd be all cooking everything with your almost turkey.
It hurt.
Yeah. So you get to keep the
so
name.
Where are we going tonight?
Well, yeah, we got special treat again. We are bringing back now this name I do always screw up, and I'm going to say it before he gets on. Mr. Pond Predator himself, Nick Obermach, is sitting in the wings waiting for me to call him. And we are going to talk some fishing. And see what he's got to say. And I've been we're Facebook friends, everything else, Fred. So I talk to him quite a bit, but I get to follow all of his posts online. So I know how well he's been doing. And that's why I said we got to have him back on because, oh my gosh, he's been a fishing machine with this quarantine and everything going on. So I said, hey, he's like, I'm in, man, I'm in. So I'm going to give him a call right now. We'll get him going.
Let's get him in.
Nicholas.
Hey guys, what's going on?
What are you saying, Nick. Buddy?
Nick, how you doing? Not bad, man. Just having a beer, chilling out.
Relaxing.
And, yeah. Enjoying the nice night.
Okay, so before I brought you on, I tried to pronounce your name. So I won't do you the disgrace of doing it with you on the phone, but it is Nick. Go.
Obermach.
See, and I called you Obermach. I was close enough. So, Nick Obermach, Pond Predators, buddy, we want to know what is happening. I'm following you. Of course, on Facebook, I get to see you just slamming fish left, right, and center. But you are not guiding because of the freaking COVID crap that's happening, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So, which is a bummer and a downer. But on the side of that, you are still getting out there and hammering fish.
I got to do some other stuff, but I'm usually jigging the Detroit River, right? But I put a lot of hours on Lake Erie for crappie this year, this spring, last month.
Especially. I've been seeing that. So you've been nailing the crappie like nonstop. Now, is this, so this isn't the same Lake St. Clair that you're in there for muskie and everything else, right? You're going Lake Erie for crappie.
Yeah. And I mean, they get them here too. They get them here too. But I really wanted to learn. I've always wanted to learn Lake Erie. So, and I've just started fishing the last couple of years. So I really put my time in this spring, and I got them dialed in now.
Yeah, nice.
So, what are you using? Nice. How are you fishing these things? Because I think crappie, and it's okay. So here's where I get to bring in my fishing ignorance, aside from bass fishing. So. For me, I consider crappie, and it's not until probably social media really kicked in that I realized, holy crap, crappie are not sunfish. Sunfish are not bluegill.
Oh, Nick.
No, they're actually in the bass family.
That's why they're so vicious, right?
Yeah, they're really aggressive. They actually fight quite a bit like a bass, to be honest with you.
Okay, so school me. So let's start sunfish. They are not bluegill or crappie, right?
No.
So
sunfish is a pumpkin seed.
Pumpkin seed. I used to call them bluegill.
No, bluegill is a bluegill. There's bluegill and there's pumpkin seeds. Two different kinds of fish.
Mm. See? Haha, Bill, you're with me.
I learned something today, but I do know the difference between a sunfish and a crappie.
But do you know the difference between a walleye and a pickerel?
I do. Yeah,
it more resides with the person and where he's from.
That's exactly right. It's a matter of opinion. That's all it is.
Oh, that's awesome. All right.
I heard someone, I don't know for sure, but I heard someone, I've been on these a lot of these crappie forums and stuff, and I heard someone call a crappie down south a calico bass.
Mm. No doubt, eh?
Yeah.
A calico bass. So how big are these guys getting?
My biggest one this spring was probably 15 inches.
15 inches?
That's a big crappie. Yeah.
Holy crappie.
Holy crap. Yeah.
Holy crap. That is a big fish. So, and they're super aggressive. Are you using jigs, worms, minnows? See, I picture, and here's where I'm at. This is my thought because I've never thought about fish and crappie. And we're going to get into why and everything, but hold on. So first off, I think of, okay, I got to take my kids somewhere to go fishing. And my kids do not have the patience and therefore need to be catching something fast. So I'm going to get worms. I'm going to get bobbers. I'm going to get like a number 2-aught hook, and we're going to go sit on the pier. And what I would call, we're fishing for, because the name crappie, I think they're crap fish. Like, we're not going to eat these things, and we're just going to catch them and release them. And really, they're catching sunfish. And that's why I've always thought, not being that expert of a fisherman, that crappie, sunfish, pumpkin seed, bluegill, whatever, are all the same fish. But these are not, right? So these guys are vicious. You're not fishing with a worm and a hook and a bobber and like the dumb sunfish. Now, A, what are you using? B, how hard do you got to work for these things?
Well, they're not far off. I'm using tube jigs, like plastic, soft plastic.
Like little ones? Like 2-inch, 3-inch?
Yeah, small. 2-inch usually. I'm like 2-inch, like, because I find you get a few more aggressive fish that way, a little bigger bait. But, or it depends on the time of the season. Like earlier, they're pretty much done now. Like they're post spawn now, so they're out in deeper water. But earlier in the year, they're in shallow, and they spawn between 67 and 71 degrees. So when the water was below 67, they're pre-spawned. And I was fishing anywhere from, I'd say, 3 to 1.5 feet of water, and to 2 feet of water on average. And you use a slip bobber, and you run it down. You run it down to an eighth of an ounce jig. There's so many different colors. I use the chartreuse or pink usually.
Or pink.
And my favorite color, yeah, pink. And my favorite color tube is probably black and chartreuse, or pink and white. Or red and silver. There's different colors, but
I love this.
Black and chartreuse is my best.
for me, guys have always known like the major colors, right? Green, blue, yellow, red, white, black. You bring a fisherman into the conversation and all of a sudden you got freaking weirdo colors like chartreuse. So, well, now, is that the dark orange brown color?
No, it's like a neon green.
I mean, that's the yellow. Neon green color, right? Yeah, I know chartreuse. Yeah. So when I fish for bass, I like to use tube jigs, but I go and I call it the brownie orange with the flex in it. And that's the tube.
Oh, that would be what you would look at for the on the package. Yeah, the brownie orange with the flex in it.
I look through the package and I see the color I want. I ain't got to read nothing. Ain't nobody got time to read.
No, I got it. Yeah.
That's too awesome. All right. So you're using tube jigs and they're
ultralight setup. Yeah, I use an ultralight, and I think that's the most important part is I'm running 4-pound braid to even six, you can use a 6-pound braid too.
You're using braid for catching crappie?
Braid, yeah. Yeah, because the only reason I'm using braid is because a lot of people don't use braid, but I like it because I'm fishing bulrushes earlier in the year. I'm casting right in front of bulrushes, into the bulrushes, and if you run your light pound mono and you get your jig snagged in the bulrush, you have to break the line. You're not pulling it out, and then you have to basically break the line, and you can't drive your boat in there because you're going to scare all the fish, right? So you have to go before you leave, and then go to the next spot. You got to go in there and then grab your bobbers and your lines.
Okay, hold on. You're fishing bulrushes, like weeds up in Lake Erie, like where largemouth would lay.
Yeah, basically the crappie and the largemouth are basically spawning at the same time in the same area, like making the same bed.
I might want to go fish some crappie now. Like this is because I love going there in the inner bay at Log Point and fishing that shallow in the weeds and the cattails and pulling out the largies and having them slam that tube. That's where the crappie are.
For sure there's crappie in there in Long Point.
And that's where the crappie are, eh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's all on water temperature, though. That's the tricky thing about crappie fishing. It's all based on water temperature. If it's too cold, they'll sometimes move into a little deeper water, and then they'll go back in. If it warms up, they'll go back in. If it cools off again, they'll go back a little bit deeper. But what you have to keep in mind is those magic numbers, 67 to 71.
How did you learn that?
That's the spawning period. I learned it from a lot of internet forums, and there's a lot of really good crappie fishermen in this area. I've listened to people. I listen to what they do. I watch what they do.
That sounds like such an oxymoron. There's a lot of good crappie fishermen.
Yeah. Oh, there is, man. There's some. There's guys. There's guys that's all they do is fish crappie. You know what I mean? I'm a multi species angler, but I'm more of a walleye and musky guy, right? But these guys, that's all they do. Target crappie.
To your point, Nick, there's a lot of guys in the states, lower states, that would throw up a big largemouth bass back for a crappie any day of the week.
They're the best eating fish we have.
Well, I was just going to say they're the best. They're sweetest. I don't know. I'm pretty particular to a walleye, or pickerel, but the crappie is a sweet, just a well-rounded fish.
Are you serious? These things you just said, they're the best eaten fish we have.
Better than perch.
No freaking way. Are you kidding me?
No. I like crappie, the perch, then walleye. That's my order of fish that I like to eat.
I love me some perch.
Yeah, I like
better. It's sweeter. Like you just said, it's sweeter. Crappie's sweeter than perch, man. It's got a sweetness to it. You can't beat it. Like, you absolutely can't beat it.
Okay, so that was going to be my next question is why? Why are we targeting crappie when you've got... when you got pickerel and you've got muskie, you could go after and have some fun, and you've got bass coming up and everything. But crappie, why is everybody going after crappie? So that just
they're not only good eating, they're fun to catch, man, and they're not an easy species. I'd say crappie is one of the most elusive species that we have, and you can fish for days and not catch them because a thing about crappie is. So when you fish like docks and marinas and stuff, so let's say you go into a marina and they're like, you go and you fish the first 10 docks, you don't catch anything. And then on number 11 dock, you throw your line down and boom, 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 you just start catching one after another, right? That's after you figured what depth they're at, because the depth will change every day too when you're fishing, especially when you're fishing marinas. One day you'll get them a foot down, one day it's 5 feet down, one day it's 6 feet down. It's different every single day. They're up or they're down, and sometimes they don't want to move. So dialing into crappie is really, really hard. And then once you got them dialed in, you go back the next day, guess what? They might not be there. You got to spend the whole day again trying to find them. And that's what makes crappie fishing hard. Like, if they move fast, they're fast and furious when you're on them, and they're cold when they're not.
All right, like, Lake really Erie, cold. What's the numbers like? There a whack load of them?
There's lots of fish, but it's a matter of finding them.
Trying to get onto them. So is that maybe the lure? Aside from the taste, it's more you've mastered. I could say this, Nick. I know you way too well now that you've mastered the pickerel deal. There's so many people that A, would that take your guide service. B, that would want to follow you around if they weren't on your guide service, just fishing right beside you because they know you know. Then the muskie, I mean, you've had days where you've slammed 58 muskie in one day. So that you've mastered. Is it a case now if you've got to master the crappie now? It's a tougher fish to, is that your allure?
Yeah, that's part of it, because crappie's always been, especially growing up as a kid, everyone always gets excited when someone catches crappie, right?
Seriously,
you get jealous.
See, this is mind-blowing. You get jealous. To
like
me.
Someone's like, "Oh, I got a limit of crappie." You're like, you're like, "Damn, I wish I had a limit of crappie."
See, to me, that you was know? Brown trout. Everybody lost their mind when you got a limit of brown trout. And now it's crappie. I never heard it. Maybe this is the difference. You grew up on a lake. I grew up on inland with streams, right?
Yeah,
where it's brooks and browns, it's the big deal. And for you guys, it's pickerel, muskie, and crappie. But I had no idea that they were the bass family, that they were vicious like bass, that you could fish them with a tube jig. You're selling me, my man.
Yeah. I went up to Wabashin one year, and I fished up there for crappie. And I was just knee high to a grasshopper, little kid going with a buddy of mine, that family friend. And we fished off docks and had a great time doing it. But strange part of that story was my wife's dad actually owned the place we went to. And obviously at 12 years old or 10 years old, whatever I was, I had no idea who my wife was or his father or anything. But we started swapping stories when we got married. After that, we were talking about, oh, I used to own a campground bar place up in Wabashin. I said, oh, yeah, I went fishing there. And I started explaining to it. He says, that was my place. You guys had to ask me for permission to go onto our docks out there to fish for crappie.
And did you explain to him you didn't ask permission, you just went? Because that's who you are.
I asked. That's how I roll. No. Yeah, 12 years old, I'm a rebel, right? No. We drove a long ways to get up there, and we found this spot and asked
Isn't
permission.
That
and
it freaking turned out, wild. And so yeah, it was your wife's dad's place?
Yeah. Yeah. He owned the little marina slip campground bar type place that was there, and that was the my fondest memory of crappie fishing was at the place that he owned 10 15 years before I even met my wife.
It was in the stars.
It had to be.
Maybe you met her, you just didn't know it.
Maybe
she was standing there beside him when you asked permission.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. As 12 years old, boy, you might have remembered that.
Might have.
That's pretty wild. And you can't see. And I don't think I've ever, I don't know, because I wouldn't again. Brown trout for me was the deal, right? We go, we hunt them in the stream. Everybody, once you start nailing brown trout, what stream are you in? Where are you getting those? No. That ain't happening. You got dudes trying to follow you in the morning to find out where you're going. And so maybe when I was out on the lake from time to time fishing, I caught a crappie. I wouldn't even acknowledge it being a crappie, because to me, it was a sunfish or a pumpkin seed or a bluegill. It didn't matter to me. So I don't know. Honestly, coming into this podcast, I thought, okay, Nick's been slamming crappie. Guys talk about it. I'm on a couple Facebook groups, you know, that down in the States, like Nick says, that guys, it's called crappy and something else. And guys are all about the crappy fish. And I'm like, these guys, like, have they not tasted trout? But now I was so ignorant to it all. It's unbelievable. So crappy, I'm impressed, hits like a bass, tastes better than any freshwater fish we have. It tastes better. So in Ontario, it's the number one taste in fish, but it's a challenge to catch. It's like, you're just amping this up, Nick. This is like going after 12-point bucks now.
And I'll tell you one thing about crappie. Everyone's very secretive about crappie fishing. Nobody will tell you where they're fishing. That's the number one rule about crappie fishing.
That's brown trout for me.
There you go.
Where do you get them? All in the mouth?
Yeah. In the water.
That's why I say Lake Erie. That's why I'm telling you Lake Erie. And I'm not telling you where I was fishing.
Yeah, we'll talk afterwards.
Yeah.
Look at your Tinder profile just got even better. Ladies, he knows where the crappie are. Oh, hashtag handline and after dark. Hey, now what is it? Team jigging in the day? Anyway, we'll carry on. Okay, so
it's phenomenal. It's phenomenal, Todd. Like when you get on them, where I'm at, like when you find them, it's your limit's 30. You know, you're being real selective of what you want to keep, and you know, you're putting 30 fish. If you wanted to come and catch 30 fish and leave, you could do that in an hour and a half.
Easy. Are you kidding me? So they're schooled up big
when it's,
time.
When it's prime, it's not prime anymore, but when it was prime, I'd say about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, right before we had that big hot spell. Dude, that hot spell.
And
that,
you were going to Lake Erie. Everything. You could have called me. I'd have wore a mask.
Yeah. And your boat's bigger than 6 feet, so you're sure you should be good.
Oh, crap. Yeah, we're going on the lake. Which boat did you use? Did you use the big, big, huge, freaking musky boat?
No, I'm fishing the bull rushes, man. I can't leave that boat in there.
It doesn't matter. If Todd can't see bottom, he's.
If I can't see land or bottom, we got issues. Yeah, and if the swells are bigger than 6 inches,
you're done.
I'm out. You're done. Not happening. Not doing it. So you could.
So what are you?
You could launch that boat into the sandbar, and we could fish from that. I'd be okay.
So what are you doing with all these fish? Cooking, throwing back.
I threw most of them back. I mean, I kept a few limits this year. I gave some away.
I was going to say, sorry to interrupt, because before we get into this, because I know where we're going, and I like it, is how many do you guesstimate in this season have you caught? Because watching your Facebook, buddy, I would not have guessed in a million years they were that hard to catch. I would have thought it was like taking my kids to the dock and yanking out sunfish every 30 seconds.
I mean, I know how many I kept all season. Like I said, I don't have that many in my freezer. I gave them away, but I kept 90 and I probably caught about 500.
Wow. All right. Sorry, Bill, carry on your question. You can take it where I think I know you're going.
just wondering, I know that you're doing some really good things, for first line or frontline workers, with the pickerel that you were catching. I was curious if you were still carrying on with that and cooking a little bit up or eating or throwing back, or what you're up to with all these fish that you were catching.
Yeah, we threw most of them back. I gave a few away to some nurses I know and stuff like that, and a couple older guys. Whenever my uncle, my own family, when they know you got crappie, everyone wants it, right? Yeah. It's like the lobster of the river, of the lake, but you know, they're delicious. So everybody wants it. It's not hard to give it away. That's for sure.
Yeah. I can guarantee you that. Put a little bit in the freezer pack and send it up this way.
You're like the Walter White of fishing.
Yeah. I think I've got one or two more crappie trips in me. Like they're getting a little harder to catch, a little harder to get a limit, but, yeah, I'll try and get some for you guys, man.
I was gonna say, like, turkey season's over, Nick, and I got a mask. I'm just throwing that out there. I'm just throwing that out there. I mean, if it's like Walter White, and that's how I'll wear a full suit.
It's different now, though. Like, I'm fishing like open water, like a half mile offshore, like
Bill,
looking for weed bed.
I'm out.
Oh yeah, Todd's out.
I'm out.
Half mile offshore.
That's why it's so much harder to find now. They're harder to find now because they're out. they're not spawning, they're right? Weeds. So they're kind of
in little pockets.
They're in weeds, but weed beds on the lake. You know what I mean? So you gotta search 100 weed beds before you find a school, and then you gotta hope the school stays there because there's muskies around, and the muskies actually chase the crappies even in those shallow bulrushes. Because this is actually I forgot to mention this to you guys. So I had one on. I had a nice crappie on. Next thing you know, this like 43, 44 inch muskie grabs my crappie, jumps straight out of the water with my crappie in his mouth, and then lands and rips the crappie right off my hook and stole it.
The predators are
no doubt
taking your fish.
At Lake Erie is not typically the go-to for muskie fishing, is it?
No, I had no idea there was muskies in that area. Like I said, I'm fishing like marshlands. You know what I mean? Like it's wetlands. So I'm fishing wetlands. I didn't know the muskie were in there.
No doubt.
Gives you another opportunity to catch a big fish. Heading over to Lake Erie for some muskie fishing.
Yeah, right. Well, that's crazy.
Which opens on Saturday. Season opens on Saturday.
Muskie Jeez. Fishing does?
Yep.
All right, much like walleye, I've never caught a muskie.
Really?
Yep. I had a neighbor. So at my last, I'm going to give a little too much info about myself, but I've lived on the same street my whole life. So after graduating college, I bought a house. The street kept getting bigger, though. I bought a house around the corner from my parents on the same street. And then after I got a little bit better position in my career path, we bought a model home down as the street kept going, and they built new houses. But the last house, which is just 100 houses up on my street, that neighbor was a huge musky fisherman. I mean, he called it musky hunting, and he was dedicated. And I don't know where he went, but every weekend he would go fish. And I believe he did some tournaments too, because he was telling me how he had his gas paid for by his sponsors and stuff like that. And so he was explaining to me that he would have to, in order, and Nick, you could totally contradict this because you catch a 58. I always thought musky were, again, super elusive, hard to find, hard to catch, because he would tell me about knowing where the muskie live and then just rolling in his boat doing a figure eight with a giant freaking lure out the back to tick them off until they got mad enough that they'd hit it. And yeah, that was the stories he told me. I mean, he had like a big 300 horse shrimp looking Merc on the back of this boat. It was a good sized boat. I probably would go in his boat, but that was the only time that I knew about muskie fishing, and didn't know how hard it was. And then in comes Nick, where you're nailing like 58 in a day. And I'm like, what? That didn't make sense to me either. But again, my ignorance in fishing. So, but yeah, I've never caught a muskie. So I always thought that I never would, because they were just too elusive. But that's season's opening. And now what are you going to do? You're not guiding again, are you?
Not yet. They're saying June 30th. Things might open back up.
And they'll allow you? How? Oh, yeah. What a pain.
It's hard because I don't want to, I'm not even going to take bookings till I know for sure, because I don't want to cancel on people and make people upset. And, you know, so I'm just waiting until we get know what to do. And I mean, this season's pretty much a write off. So.
No, I hear you. I got to cancel that. You just reminded me, I got to make a post. I got to cancel the Redneck Country Trap Shooting Shotgun Clinic.
That sucks. I was really looking forward to doing that this year.
Yeah, I hear you. We love doing it every year. You just can't bring 25 people into the clubhouse, right?
It's just not going to work this year, and I'm not sure what the clubs are about, but a lot of them are members only.
Yeah.
Shooting, right? So yeah,
we are.
It's kind of hard to put in shoots. Are you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so
kind of bleh, but
switching gears.
Yeah, sorry. Back to it.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, Bill, have you, I know you did an extensive amount of fishing back in the day. Have you caught, you gone after muskie a lot?
No, not really, to be honest with you. We not really had much opportunity to fish muskie. I've caught them, that's for sure, but it was more so by accident when fishing for something else than it was for actual for muskie targeting or muskie hunting.
So. But you caught them while fishing for other stuff? No doubt, eh?
Absolutely, yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah. Some of the pike waters that you fish in hold muskie too. So you luck out by catching a muskie when you're targeting a bass. Even I was up on the French River last year at my wife's uncle's cottage, and I wasn't fishing for pike, but certainly one latched on, and there it was in the boat. When you're fishing for bass or something, you never know.
Yeah.
When it sees the worm or the hook or whatever, it's going to come chasing. But to say that I actually targeted muskies, no, I can't say that.
No doubt.
But right. Switching gears, I want to talk. I mean, Nick's on, and I always like sharing a few stories of cooking when he's on, because I can't do that with Todd, because I see the fire alarms going off in his house.
That was only because...
No, Lord, okay, there's a story here, is there?
Well, there's a slight story. Oh, Bill. So that was on my private Facebook. Nobody would know this, because my wife decided to film it instead of help me. That was,
which I think is hilarious.
Well, and my youngest was helping me cook, so she was right beside me on my hip, which was even more funny. But it was only because it was wild turkey breasts. And I think I shared with you, Nick, on Facebook Messenger. I hit you with, I was making this glaze and I was all pumped. But prior to that, so I'd done this twice now. So with the previous turkey breast, it called for a dry rub for 12 hours before. Well, I had shot the turkey on the Sunday, and then Sunday night I soaked it in salt water and we were eating it Monday night. So I didn't have time to do this dry brine thing that it called for. And I figured I didn't really need to, because I soaked it in salt water for like 24 hours. So that was like a wet brine. Right. So we're good to go. I did coat it in butter. I put pans underneath it and put it on the rack, not on the pan, because this is what the recipe. I even apologized to Nick ahead of time. I'm not coming to you, buddy. I went rogue. I went on Google. So
that'll learn you.
Yeah, right. But this one was good. So the glaze was pretty wicked. I mean, it had like maple, it had brown sugar, maple syrup. It had paprika. I put a little liquid smoke in there because it wanted smoked paprika, and I don't have that. I just have paprika. So, hey, I made smoked paprika, and then it had some other stuff, some butter in that. And so I made it. It comes, you cook it for 2 minutes. It makes this paste. And then 30 minutes after it's been in the oven, every 10 minutes, then you baste it till it hits 165. And it turned out phenomenal. My six-year-old was eating it like candy because of that crust that it formed on the outside from that paste and baking it in the oven like that. It was awesome. So this one I had time to do the dry brine. And so the dry brine, then right afterwards, it called for shake the dry brine off, which I did. And the dry brine was just like salt and pepper and sugar. And I don't know, a little bit of other stuff, paprika and stuff like that. So I did that and then I shook it off. And then it said, coat it in butter, like, big time. And the first one I did, but this time, oh man, did I slap the butter to it. And then I made the same thing. So then I put it in the oven and I put the pans under it, because the wife would get mad at me if I made the oven that dirty on the butter. So I got cookie sheets underneath. It's not on the cookie sheets, but they're a rack below it to catch the butter dripping off of them, because I was ahead of time. Well, there was so much butter that it was like dripping off it was boiling in the pan. So I opened the door the first time to check it, and I'm almost knocked over. It was like an episode of Chicago Fire just hit me in the face, and it was barreled out. I'm like, holy geez, like I couldn't see them at the kitchen table. So I'm running around opening windows. I have a wherewithal that I know this freaking smoke detector goes off and it's hardwired. So I go grab the fan that we have, a little stand-up fan, and I aim it at it and I turn it on. Well, within 5 minutes, the smoke alarm's going off. So I'm up there like a hula girl whipping this towel around and holding the fan up. My little six-year-old's right there. Well, the second time that I did it, it was even more, because now there's even more butter has dripped in the pan. And now it's like, oh, it was insanity. I just couldn't. But when I opened it up, you couldn't see nothing. And that smoke alarm, Jen videoed for 2 minutes and 44 seconds, and it was still going when she stopped. I had a fan. I'm on a chair holding the fan right at the smoke detector. It would not shut off. Every window in the house open. She's yelling at me that the neighbors are going to call the fire department and everything else. But yeah, so she went live on Facebook or whatever the whole time this was happening. And my little six-year-old right there alongside me whipping the towel, trying, like, it was pandemonium. However,
just just in case you're wondering, the food is typically done before that particular alarm goes off. Just in case you're wondering.
This was just the butter. I swear. So it still turned out awesome. And to the point where my dad actually came over and stole a breast. So
probably because he heard the alarm going off from his house.
If my dad heard that alarm, he was within 200 yards.
Yeah, there you go.
He was already on his way. Oh, yeah. So that was my... But it did turn out good. I tell you what, that paste there that I made, it was phenomenal. It was awesome. It makes this nice candy coating on the turkey. It's like candy coated turkey. How do you go wrong with that?
You can't.
Anyway, I digress. So back to crappy cooking.
Anytime making fun of Todd is awesome.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. No, everybody's afraid to, Bill. They're afraid I'm going to come back.
Not me. Not me. I'm good with it. So here's your opportunity. Nick, you'll probably have a good chuckle at this one too. I bought a roast at Costco. I went there. I'm trying more stuff.
Hold on. Barbecue. Hold on. You bought meat?
I did. You know, this is what happens when the almost guy can't fill a tag. He's got to go to Costco when things are on sale and buy something for the family.
Hunting is extra expensive for the almost guy. He's got to buy a tag, all the gear, and his own meat.
We roll.
Sorry, Bill. Had to get you back.
Yeah, you know what? It's okay. It didn't even take you long to get me back. So I'm giving you more ammunition here in a minute. So I bought this roast a couple weeks ago, and I was going to do a nice charcoal barbecue something on it. And I did some research in the Weber cookbooks that my wife got me, my mom got me for my birthday and Christmas and stuff, and found a really good recipe. But they called for, funny enough, a dry brine on this meat. And I've never done that before, but I figured I'd give it a shot. So what I did was I took it out to cook for Saturday, but I took it out on Friday night, and I poured the coarse salts on the meat.
Oh, I know where that's going.
So me thinking that I'm going to cook this on Saturday, it would only have less than 24 hours before I take it out, and it would be okay then to cook with a little bit of salt. And I put more coarse salt than I probably should have at beginning, because it's a thick piece of meat and I wanted it to soak in with less than 24 hours worth of marinade time with the salt. Well, Saturday got to be too windy, and it was just unsafe in my opinion, because I'm to barbecue. Well, then Sunday it got way windy and way too safe. So now I've got the salted roast in the fridge for Friday night, all of Saturday, all of Sunday, and Monday comes yesterday, and I thought, well, it's about time to cook this roast, and wow.
You could have just sliced it into jerky at that point, no dehydration needed. You were good to go.
It was, I would say, a little bit cured, but I took it and I thought, well, there's no salt visible on this, no moisture in the container. It's an expensive enough roast. It's enough for the family to have something on. And we made a rub for the top of it with honey mustard and shallots and some garlic and whatnot. It was a really nice rub to put on top, which give a crust when you put it on the charcoal barbecue. And that turned out phenomenal. Well, I go to cut into it, and it's like the texture of ham. There's no tenderness to this piece of meat anymore. It's a cured, smoked piece of whatever, and the family loved it because of the salt content. It was like licking a salt block. And I just said, well, I mean, we had it, and I was super critical of it and feeling bad about myself for it. So we ended up cutting it up into stewing chunk pieces, and Candace made a stew out of it today. And it was one of the best stews I've ever had. But there was no salt added to the stew after that. Oh,
see? Now you just need to post that on Pinterest, and you're a freaking guru.
Oh, I had to do something because I felt so bad about the fact that this beautiful piece of meat that should have been cooked on Saturday had 3 days worth of salt curing on it with coarse salt. Like, they had enough salt that I would put on a deer hide if I was taking the moisture out of a deer hide. Like, I don't know what I was thinking, but Nick, you'd be impressed, though. For dessert,
that's awesome.
Yeah. For dessert, what I did was I did barbecued peaches.
What?
Ooh, yeah. See?
Oh, I'm Nick, don't ooh like that's here. A good thing. Like, let's put this in a barbecued what? Barbecued peaches. Peaches. Did you have it with your tea?
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I did have it with my tea and ice milk, not ice cream, by the way. So we barbecued some peaches and we made a blackberry.
No, you can't skip that. How? Sugar. You got to tell me, how do you barbecue peaches? So I know how to cook a grilled cheese, and I flipped that son of a gun 42 times at Camp Bird. I know now how to cook chops. Nick told me, you crank that barbecue to 500, you leave the lid open, you slap them on there. When they hit 135, you're good. You take them off. You eat them. You only flip them once. Bob's your uncle. How do you barbecue peaches?
The secret is, and I found out this yesterday, that the peaches need to be a little bit riper than they were when I put them on the barbecue, because I ended up losing one. But that's another story. So you cut them in half lengthwise. You pit them. You cut them in half right through the stem, like that way as opposed to the other way.
Okay.
And you take the pits out of them, and you literally put your barbecue up to 425 direct heat right over top of the charcoals, and you slap them on there for 3 to 5 minutes aside, flipping them, obviously 10 minutes total cook, 3 to 5 minutes per side, and that's it. It's super simple. They get a caramelized texture to them because of the charcoal barbecue.
You eat them warm or you let them cool?
No, you eat them warm. It's like having a peach cobbler or something.
I like my peaches medium rare.
Well, then take them off sooner then. we put the peaches on the barbecue, three to five minutes aside is what I did. I can't remember if it was three or five, but anyways. And then they become caramelized on top. And then with the ice milk or ice cream, if you have it, with this blackberry the sauce that you make up and reduce on the stove over top, you got a wonderful no fuss dessert.
I like that reduce. That's reduce. A cooking term sounds, for
sounds
simmer.
Delicious.
Yeah. This is what you get at the Tom household. You don't get a lot of wild turkey, but you definitely, you get some venison.
Well, they were out hunting turkeys. They found a peach tree.
Yeah.
In somebody's greenhouse.
That's it.
Oh, Nick, peaches have you ever done barbecued peaches?
I've never. No, that's awesome. Because I can see that getting that caramelized taste and that barbecue smoky flavor, and that'd be really good.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, geez.
Charcoal barbecue. I had mesquite wood left over from the meat, still smoldering on the coal, so it had kind of a smoky barbecue taste to them as well. They're really good.
That's awesome. So I got a really good recipe to share with you guys. I just tried it this year. It was the first time I ever made it. And I did it with my crappy, actually.
I was going to say, tell us how you cook the crappy, because if it's the best taste of fish in our area, we got to know how to cook it.
Well, you can cook it like any other fish. Like, you can batter it and deep fry it, whatever, you know, do anything you want with it. But I did something a little different. So what I did was I went to the grocery store and I bought some snow crab and some snow crab and some jumbo shrimp. And I brought it home. I filleted up my crappie, cleaned them nice. And I made in a bowl, I mixed my snow crab with some panko, some butter.
Some what?
Some panko breadcrumbs. And I fried up some bacon and I crisped it up a little bit. I threw that in there and I seasoned it really well with a lot of garlic butter or a lot of garlic seasoning and garlic powder and salt and pepper. And I took my crappie flays and I wrapped the crappie flay around it. So I made like rolls almost. And then I seasoned the crappie. I seasoned the crappie with Old Bay seasoning and some salt and pepper. And I started to bake that in the oven like that. And then I took a cream mushroom and I had some fresh mushrooms on too. And I poured that all into the casserole dish and on top of the crappie and put some sharp cheddar cheese. And I threw the jumbo shrimp in the sauce and I let it simmer in the oven for about another 15, 16 minutes, just until the shrimp were pretty much cooked. And I ate it like that, man. And oh my God. And it was awesome.
Dude. Okay. That does sound good, but I am so missing Scott, because this is, I don't know how you're single, Nick. I really, you're going to make somebody an amazing wife someday. I'm not kidding you. And Scott would again be proposing if he was on this podcast. Me and Scott, we just kill it and grill it, man. Like, that's what we are about. And you and Bill, you're freaking barbecuing peaches and shrimp and crab, and you're mixing and you're using these big words like, I don't even know. I can't even, chartreuse. Like-
Puree.
What was the word for render, cooking the sauce on the render, stove?
Reduce. Reduce. That's a big word.
Reduce. It's reduce. Two syllables. Reduce. Reduce.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, good Lord. I just chuck it on the grill. I flip it. I eat it. Ain't nobody got time for that. I am impressed. I got to say, Nick, you could cook for me anytime.
Yeah, it came out so nice, man. You know what? If you ever want to impress the wife, I gotta say, like, making that, it looks really fancy. You know what I mean? It looks really nice and fancy. And you can decorate your plate real nice. You can lay a couple of asparagus across top of it or whatever, you know, and you can make it look super, super fancy. Dude, and that's what was really nice about it.
But she doesn't listen to this, thank goodness, so I could say this, but you lost me at Impress Your Wife. That ship sailed 18, 20 years ago. That ship sailed when I was vetoed from cooking. The first time I thought, before we had kids, I'm going to make supper. My wife, she could cook. And so I thought, this time I'm going to make supper for her. You know, she worked late. I'm home first. I'm going to do this up. And I was like workaholic, man, back in the day. Like, I was barely home because I was traveling all through the States and everything. So I was home this time. I could make supper. I'm going to do this. So now, are you sitting down? So she's not home yet. And so I'm like, hey, when are you leaving? Oh, I'm leaving shortly. Okay, now is the time. So I buttered the bread. I didn't even open the sliced cheese. No. I cut slices off the block, my man.
Holy
shit. Oh, I tell you what. I lined that cheese up on that pieces of bread just perfect. I put it in the pan. I flipped them 42 times. Can't burn them if you're flipping them. Got them out. Put them on a plate. She's not home. Crap. I made the perfect dinner. I would show her I could cook. So I wrapped them up with a paper towels and tea towels on a plate. And I left them. Well, she pulls in the laneway. It's go time. Threw them in the microwave. Got those grilled cheese all set. Slapped them on the table. They were like rubber. She's like, you're never going to cook again. Nick, that was me trying to impress my wife.
Your gourmet grilled cheese sandwiches went over like lead balloons.
Or like green sponges from underneath the sink. But yeah. But because she doesn't listen to this, I could say this too. Never really ever had to cook again.
I think that was a tactic that you assumed.
It's not dumb. I think I shared my shopping tactic before, right? Where I go into Bass Pro with Dad and the women go shopping. I load the cart up and Dad's like, you don't need that. What do you got that for? Well, so when Jen comes to approve, I'm using air quotes, my purchases, because I don't know how much money we got. I can go, well, all right, I'll sacrifice. I'll put that back. I don't really need that. Okay, I'll put it. So I look like a hero. The stuff I really want's on the bottom. I'm good to go. I have learned.
That's pretty wise.
And I'm like, look, I've matured, dear. I really don't need to buy all this stuff. You're right. Those are frivolous purchases. But these last few items in the bottom, I really do need those. Done deal. I sacrifice. So my cooking's the same. And then come to the point where she normally cooks, but I thought, hey, I killed the turkey. I'm going to cook that turkey. And I normally do. I'm the barbecue guy, but this one, I didn't even go to Nick. I was all proud of myself. I Googled this sucker, and then it ends up going live on Facebook as I'm freaking hula girl on a chair trying to get my smoke alarm to turn off.
Yeah, you got to impress your wife somehow, I guess. Right?
Yeah, hey, my dancing skills. Should have seen my hips rumba.
Yeah, I did. You lost me right there. I clicked the off button then. You can pull me if I'm scared. I tell
I'm
you.
Married. I don't need to impress anybody with a Tinder account.
Oh, I also made some bacon wrapped crappy too. That came out pretty good. It was just like, I was like, ooh, I feel like a little snack. I had just cleaned some crappy, so I seasoned them real quick. I just rolled them in bacon and brushed them with a little bit of garlic butter. And I rendered the bacon first, but then I rolled them and then I just threw them in my my little conventional oven and / air fryer. And I cooked them for like 8 minutes in the oven and then switched to air fryer mode. And they just like the bacon just like crisped right up. And then I just sat down and like drank a couple beer and ate those with some cocktail sauce, dipping them in cocktail sauce. That was really good too.
You could pretty much, and that sounded good. I'd have to experience it to be able to back you up on that. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. But you could pretty much wrap anything in bacon and you're good to go. I mean, that's just like a general consensus, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. One of the best things I did lately was I did on the charcoal barbecue again. I don't know if I told you this, Todd, but I did homemade bacon wrap jalapeno poppers.
Ah, yes.
With on the charcoal barbecue. They were fantastic. I cooked them for about 35 minutes, but a full jalapeno pepper, cut it in half, seed it, take all that out, put urban garlic cream cheese in it, wrap it with fresh thick bacon, put it on in a basket with tin foil in there so the grease doesn't get on your coals, and cook it on indirect heat for 35 minutes, and they came out the best that I've ever had.
See, awesome. And I
cook them until they're awesome. Crispy and they're good to go.
I'm not a hot, like spicy hot kind of dude.
They're not. No, honestly, neither is my wife. She's like mild.
Does the cream cheese kind of kill that jalapeno hotness?
Cooking actually kills it.
Yeah, and you take the seeds out. Make sure there's no seeds in it. They're not that hot with no seeds, really. No,
it's a nice flavor to the to them. I mean, it's not heat that I'm after on that. It's the flavor.
See, listening to all this, I'm going to say the most chauvinistic comment I've ever made on this, that I'm going to have to get my wife to listen to this podcast. I want to try some of this stuff.
You need to try it without your wife and surprise her.
See, do it outside because the
smoke alarm will go off.
She bacon wraps stuff, but it's like, I eat it because it's bacon wrapped, but it's like nothing, like water chestnuts. Who invented these freaking things? So, like, they come in a can, and they have absolutely no taste. They're kind of crunchy. And then you're wasting my bacon by wrapping it. Wait, why? What is the – and loves them. Her and my sister love bacon-wrapped water chestnuts. But why are you wrapping the bacon around these stupid little white balls that have absolutely no taste at all? It makes absolutely no sense to me. Now, you wrap it around some meat or something like that. Now, you've double whammied. You've got me. Tell you what.
Yeah.
Anyway, now I'm hungry. Yeah,
you gotta try something out there.
Oh, maybe. If I ever get some crappy, I know what I'm doing.
Sounds like
coming back to listen to episode 24.
Sounds like we need a crappy fishing trip.
I agree. We got masks, Nick. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. But we need him in the inner bay.
Yeah. Somewhere where Todd can put his hip waders on and walk out
to him. Yeah. Push the boat back. If the motor dies, we're good to go.
In the fall time, we get them around my town here too. They get a lot of crappie around here too in the spring. I haven't really spent that much time targeting them because I'm usually on the Detroit River all spring, but especially since I moved here. But in the fall time, I like to target crappie every now and then too around here. Get some nice ones.
I am impressed. I've learned, like, forget if anybody else listening to this learns. I learned so much. Every time we have you on, Nick, I'm like, it's unbelievable what I realize I don't know.
Yeah.
It knocked me down a couple cocky levels.
when I redo my doc, hopefully we can get them out of the dock. I'm gonna make a bunch. I'm going to sink
from
a bunch of trees underneath my dock.
Oh, don't toy with my emotions.
Yeah, well, no, we will be able to catch them from the hot tub because I'm going to make a bunch of artificial reefs. Well, I'm going to sink a bunch of trees underneath my new dock when I put it in, and I'm going to put the dock and I'm going to make like little portholes that you can open up and fish in between them right underneath the dock.
No doubt.
Yeah. Cause I heard my canal holds a lot of crappie. I haven't caught a crappie in my canal, but I've had people tell me that, oh, there you go. You live here. Like so-and-so used to live here and we used to fish and we used to smash crappie off your dock. I'm like, man, like I've yet to experience that, but
well,
one day.
Yeah, it puts a, you're right. Put some structure in the bottom there and see what you can find. That'll be good. When you doing your dock this summer?
No, probably next, within the next 3 years, I'm going to redo it.
Man,
I got other things. I didn't make any money this spring, so I got to, all my home projects are put on hold for this year. And then hopefully next year when we can do charters again, then do some other stuff. I got to put floors in first and do my kitchen and my bathroom and build a garage and then the dock.
Priorities.
Yeah.
This adulting thing sucks sometimes, eh?
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I know. I know.
How do you spell that?
Yeah.
Oh, that's too awesome. Well, thank you, Nick, buddy. Again,
appreciate it,
it's
Nick.
A blast. I can't believe how much I did not know. And now I do. I want to fish. I love bass fishing. And I will target the crap out of bass. But I had no idea they were like bass. That crappie were like bass.
They're so aggressive. When especially when they're in shallow, that when you cast your bobber, a lot of times they come and they smash the bobber.
See, that's awesome. So they'd hit top water.
That's fun.
Oh yeah, if you had a little top water bait, like a little jitterbug or something, you'd get them.
Their mouths are so small, though. You need something.
No, they have huge mouths, but they're soft. But their mouth really opens up. You know what I mean? Like if you open like a crappie's mouth up, it's big. But they,
well,
like,
you can lip them. That's for sure.
Oh, you can lip them. Yeah, they call them paper mouths, right? But because they got like just soft skin in their mouth. But I don't, you know, when you're using it, that's the important thing about using an ultralight. I forgot to mention that earlier. It's because when you're reeling them in, the ultralight has a lot of bend in it. And then the big thing is when you go to lift them out of the water. So when you lift it, the ultralight will bend and take the pressure off the fish's mouth as you're flipping it into the boat. That's why if you ever got a big one on, you have to net it or you'll lose it for sure. Cause the hook will pull out of his mouth.
You just rip it right out of their mouths, eh? No kidding.
And that's heartbreaking to lose a giant crappie. I'm talking like 15, 16 inches. Like you got to net those. Ontario Record was caught where I was fishing. I'm not going to mention who owns it or anything, but the guy caught it and, it's a monster, 17 and a half inches and 3.5 pounds. I believe it was.
My gosh.
Jeez.
That is massive. Well, now I got something to do. Look at that. I'm making a bucket list.
Good deal. Well, love to have you on again, Nick, and always enjoy talking to you. That's for sure.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. Always like have a good time. Thanks, all. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Nick. Awesome.
Okay. That'll do it for today. So until next time, on behalf of Redneck Country Podcast, I'm Bill Tom.
I'm Todd Millard and Scott Goodall.
Nope, I'm good.
Thanks for listening, everybody. If you want to be part of the podcast, by all means, hit us up at podcast@theredneckcountry.com. Again, that's podcast@theredneckcountry.com. And be part of it. Join us and have a blast. I hope you enjoyed it. Sitting around the campfire having some fun.